Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, coast to coast. On the Tom Hartman program, I'm Peter B. Collins from San Francisco, sitting in for Tom again today. And in case you haven't heard, Tom lost his father over the weekend. Carl Hartman died in Lansing, Michigan. That's where Tom is today with his family. And there is a burial tomorrow, and then Tom will return to the air. He's planning to be back on Friday, and we'll see if that all works out. And under these difficult circumstances, you may want to go to the Tom Hartman website, where you can leave a condolence message if you're so inclined. Just click on the forums tab, and you'll be able to find it from there. And Tom has indicated he very much appreciates all of the expressions that he has received from radio listeners and others at this difficult time for him. But the show must go on, and it shall. I'm delighted to be here, even under these difficult circumstances for Tom. And we've got a lot to talk about today. Coming up in about a half an hour, Brad Friedman will join us. He is single-handedly and single-mindedly fighting for election integrity in this country. He runs bradblog.com, and he has convened an emergency town hall meeting in Southern California, one tonight and one tomorrow, to examine the issues of the tainted election in California's special election June 6th that reportedly propelled Brian Bilbray to complete the term of now incarcerated Congressman Duke Cunningham. And we're going to talk about the security breaches that occurred there and why Brad and others have declared no confidence in this election. It's also Clean Money Day, and the Supreme Court yesterday issued a very interesting ruling on Vermont's campaign finance law that Howard Dean signed into law a few years back. We'll talk about that on the program today. We're going to have some fun next hour with Jim Derrick. He is the author of a new book called Confessions of a Former Ditto Head. And there has been some erectile dysfunction, apparently, in the Limbaugh zone. He got caught at the Miami airport yesterday with a bottle of Viagra, and the prescription was not in his name. And Russia's had a little problem with prescriptions in the past, so we'll talk about that with Jim Derrick coming up next hour. Also on the program today, Thomas Lindsay, a Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund attorney. He'll be joining us to talk about how to fire up the grassroots. And we'll go to the phones here shortly. That's what it's all about here on the Tom Hartman program. I love mixing it up with callers, agree or disagree. Join us in the conversation. The number's 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-8466. You can also drop me a note, peter@peterbcollins.com. That's peter@peterbcollins.com. Or if you don't agree with me, you can send it to loudmouth@peterbcollins.com. It'll reach me. First up, I want to talk to my attorney, get a little bit of legal counsel. I think it's always advisable before you engage in verbal combat on national radio. Carl Mayer is an attorney in New Jersey who is representing me and thousands of other Americans who may have been caught up in the NSA spying programs, either the eavesdropping program that is described as Call a Terrorist, or the data mining operation where they went through our telephone records. Carl Mayer, welcome to the Tom Hartman program today.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you very much for having me on and standing with your fellow citizens to fight this unprecedented intrusion on the privacy rights of all Americans. I think actually it's a important topic before the July 4th weekend, and I think people around the country are going to be having a conversation based on your show about how far the government can go to intrude on the rights that our ancestors fought so hard for.
Well, and I appreciate you representing me and thousands of other people who have gathered together to try to take on the government. This is not going to be easy. We know that they're going to use the state secret privilege. This administration has used it more than previous administrations combined, and it is a murky practice, not even grounded in legislation. But they assert on a routine basis that state secret privilege blocks trials. We've seen that in San Francisco over the AT&T data mining and email intercept program here. And so that's going to be what we confront. the brick wall of this administration's power grab. Nonetheless, I want to go forward with this lawsuit. Tell us what the status is. How many people have gathered into this class action group to take on the NSA spying program?
Sure. Well, thanks for asking. First of all, the state secrets argument, I don't think, is going to fly. There was a hearing before Judge Walker out in San Francisco just at the end of last week. We don't know which way he'll rule. I think ultimately it'll wind up in the Supreme Court. But this administration wants to classify everything. They want to classify what type of hamburger the president wants to eat. It's this broad-based assertion of the state secrets privilege combined with executive power is really an assault on the basic principle of American democracy, which is separation of powers. And they seem to have forgotten that that's what our Constitution was written to uphold. Now, the status of the lawsuit is that we already have thousands of plaintiffs signed up around the country. What we're going to be doing is presenting before a federal judge a motion to certify this as a class, which it may well be the largest class ever certified in American history, in that every person with a phone, it appears, has had their phone records turned over to the government, with the possible exception of Quest subscribers. Well, it's the actual exception of Quest subscribers, because that firm resolutely stood up and said, we will not turn over these documents. Now, so the status is we're in the middle of discovery. Since you do such important work, Peter, I'll also break some news on your program, which we weren't going to get to until Friday. But what we're going to do, what we're going to announce on Friday, is that we have some whistleblowers who have come forward and indicated to us that the Bush administration began trying to take over and observe the phone records of Americans prior to 9/11. So until now, they have justified this entire program as we have to act against terrorists because of what happened 9/11.
Right. 9/11 changed everything.
That's right. That's been their entire argument. Mm-hmm. But now we've developed evidence that they were actually in early 2001, before 9/11, had a program in place to gather these phone records from Americans, which we regard as wholly illegal.
Yeah. Carl, we have a word from the phone company right now. Just stand by.
We don't know.
Hi, my name is Jeannie, and I work for the phone company.
We don't know.
Oh, I'm Larry, and I work for the phone company.
We don't know.
I'm Nancy, and I don't know what I'm doing.
We don't know what we're doing.
You work for the only phone company in town. You don't have to know what you're doing, and there's really nothing anybody can do about it. You can try to complain, but you probably won't get through. The phone company.
We don't know what we're doing.
Oh, indeed. My phone's been out at home for a week now, and Comcast promises that maybe by Thursday they're going to get somebody out there to look at it. Carl Mayer is with us on the program here today. He's an attorney, filed a class action suit to investigate what the NSA has actually been doing. He's working on my behalf and thousands of others. Carl, is Quest the only phone company we know that didn't cough up the records in the data mining operation?
No, there's one other, which is Working Assets, which is a progressive phone company, and they've been very resolute in saying they won't give over records. So I completely support that. We think that people should hang up on Verizon or AT&T and switch their accounts to Working Assets or Quest. You can do it in a second, and those companies have shown a willingness to stand up to this unprecedented intrusion on Americans' lives.
Mm-hmm.
I loved your little advertisement for the phone companies there. Americans, they simply don't believe the phone companies in this litigation because, for example, Verizon was created by merging with MCI, and MCI itself accounted for the largest financial fraud in the history of the country. $11 billion they misstated their earnings. So already people are not disposed to believe them because they committed this large financial fraud. Anyone who's ever dealt with the consumer end of the phone company knows that they're the number one source of complaints to the Federal Trade Commission. So no one believes them here. No one believes they didn't turn over the data, and we're going to do whatever we can to see that these companies are brought to justice and that the Bush administration program is stopped.
Carl Mayer, we just have a minute remaining. I want to talk about your new effort to recruit clients who may have been their rights may have been violated by the bank surveillance program that was just disclosed, and that the president calls the disclosure disgraceful. Tell us what you're going to do and how people can contact you to become a part of this lawsuit.
Sure. Well, actually, one of our colleagues, a lawyer named Steven Schwartz in Chicago, filed an action that we're going to be part of on Friday against a Swift Corporation, which is a consortium of all the banks, which it turns out is giving over your banking records.
Mm-hmm.
You can contact us at newjerseyuntouchables.blogspot.com. That's newjerseyuntouchables.blogspot.com. We already have people signing up to be plaintiffs because this is Orwellian.
Carl, we're out of time here, but thank you for joining us, Attorney Carl Mayer, here on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Thanks for joining us today on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins from San Francisco, and we're taking your calls. You can join me at 866-440-THOM. That's 866-440-8466. Coming up shortly, Brad Friedman will join us, and there are a number of issues that I want to talk about related to our elections. Brad is going to alert you to town hall meetings occurring tonight in Los Angeles and tomorrow night in Oceanside, a San Diego suburb, to talk about the issues related to the election on June 6th. That was a special election that propelled Brian Bilbray to complete the term of Duke Cunningham in Congress. And the published tally, was only a difference of 4,732 votes. And that was at a time when there were 60,000 votes remaining to be counted in San Diego County. Well, Brad has discovered serious security breaches. We'll be talking about that. There are other issues, too, related to voting. Today, Common Cause has declared it Clean Money Day. And if you go to the Common Cause website, there's great information there about some home screenings that are going on tonight all across the country. People have got copies of this new documentary about Tom DeLay, and they're going to be showing it in their homes as a way to draw attention to the clean money issues. And they have been heightened by the Supreme Court ruling that was released yesterday regarding Vermont's campaign finance laws. And the justices, in a patchwork of six separate decisions and a 6-3 final vote, ruled that the efforts to limit the role of money in politics might face considerable resistance. And this, of course, comes from the landmark decision in 1976, Buckley versus Vallejo. And that basically established that money equals speech. And in Vermont, they said that a limit of $400 as a contribution to a candidate for statewide office over a 2-year period was simply too low. And I have to say, on the face of it, that does seem logical to me, because you can limit things to the point where people can't run a campaign, can't get a message out. And, of course, I support public financing of campaigns as a way to get the private money out. And I'd like to see that happen, but it's going to move very slowly, even more slowly, on the heels of this Supreme Court decision. To your calls now, Kevin from San Diego. Kevin, you're on the Tom Hartman Program. This is Peter B.
Yes, I'd like to comment on the June 6th special election, which was held here in San Diego.
Right.
From my vantage point, I think that basically some in the Democratic Party, and I do emphasize some, I think basically they're sour grapes. Because if you look at that election, Busby was ahead in all the polls. And basically I think what happened was when she made the comment about allowing illegals, and it may have been a snafu on her part, I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I believe it was a poorly framed remark that was taken way out of context and blown way out of proportion.
But that's what they do, Peter. I mean,
yes.
That's what they do in elections.
Yes,
that's what
you're
they
right.
Do. I mean, you're giving the opposition ammunition against you when you do that. So
yes.
The thing is that, you know, it may have been an honest mistake on her part, and I believe that it probably was, okay? But basically, I think what that did, that torpedoed her campaign. And I think that now, you know, they're saying that they're finding some improprieties and so forth. That may or may not be true, but I think it's basically sour grapes on the part of some of the Democratic Party here in San Diego, and I don't even think Busby was the best candidate. I think that there was many more Democratic candidates that they could have ran against Bill Bray, because basically people had soured on the Republican Party in mm-hmm. that particular part of San Diego. And mm-hmm. and if you remember, Busby lost to Cunningham, she lost to Bill Bray, and then they're going to run her again in November. She's going to run again against Bill Bray
for the full 2-year
term. And I think she's doomed to fail.
Right. Well, Kevin, I acknowledge that from my vantage point, I've never interviewed Francine Busby, but my sense is that she is not the strongest candidate. I don't dispute that. However, the issues that Brad is going to raise, and you'll hear him in just 10 minutes, so I hope you'll stay tuned and listen with an open mind.
I most definitely
but
will.
Brad has been very clear that he doesn't really care whether it was Busby or Bill Bray. His focus is on the integrity of elections and the use of electronic machines for tabulating and for touchscreen voting. And Brad has identified serious security breaches. Essentially, the machines were sent home for sleepovers with election workers. That's in violation, very explicit violation, of the code that was adopted by the Secretary of State when he recertified the Diebold machines for this election. And so I think that there are serious questions, and they rise above District 50 and really fly, you know, into all of the elections that are being conducted with these machines.
And you know what, Peter? I support Mr. Friedman. I mean, being an independent and also being a black man in this country, I definitely support that. I mean, I definitely want transparency, especially in light of what happened in Florida and Ohio. So I definitely welcome that. And like, I didn't have a dog in that fight. I mean, I'm neither Democrat or Republican. But I'm just saying from an outsider's perspective, it just seems as if some in the Democratic Party are sour grapes at the outcome.
All right. Well, Kevin, I appreciate your point of view. I'm really glad you called. I'm going to bring that up with Brad, and I hope you'll stay listening here. And if you want to call back, I'll be happy to welcome your call if you have other thoughts after Brad's been on the program. And maybe you want to even attend one of these town hall meetings, the one in Oceanside, tomorrow night, and you could give me some feedback on what you think after you've heard it all.
Thanks a lot, Peter. I appreciate it.
All right, Kevin. Nice to have you on the program today. We'll take more of your calls coming up shortly. 866-440-THOM. That's 866-440-8466. I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco, sitting in for Tom Hartman today on the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
It's Peter B. Collins sitting in for Tom on the Tom Hartman program today. Your calls and comments are welcome. We're going to go to the phones here in just a moment. 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-8466. 866-440-8466. Love to hear from you on any issue that is of concern to you at the moment. And just a couple of cleanup items. I want to give a shout-out to Linda in Louisiana. Thanks for your email, Linda. Nice to reconnect with you. And also, if you want to get in touch with Attorney Carl Mayer, who is putting together the class action suits on the NSA spying and the newly discovered bank surveillance program, the Wire Transfer International thing, the website, again, is newjerseyuntouchables.blogspot.com. That's newjerseyuntouchables.blogspot.com. And Carl Mayer is representing me and thousands of other Americans as we seek to assert our rights to privacy. Brad Friedman is a one-man crusader fighting for fair elections in our country, and he is the proprietor of bradblog.com. He joins us on the program today. Hello, Brad.
Good morning, Peter. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing pretty well. Nice to talk with you. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to let people know about the two emergency town hall meetings that you have convened. The first one is tonight in Los Angeles at the Venice United Methodist Church, and you will be convening in Oceanside near San Diego tomorrow evening at the Oceanside Civic Center. Now, I want to put this in this context, Brad. A fellow named Kevin called the program from San Diego just a couple of minutes ago. He's a thoughtful guy. He's an independent. And he believes that there's a lot of sour grapes, that Busby wasn't a great candidate, and that Democrats are using the election issues to, you know, try to fight a rear guard action. And you have it very clearly on your website here. Americans deserve to know that their elections are counted accurately no matter the results. So you're not you don't have a dog in this proverbial hunt, right?
No, really. I couldn't care less who won as long as it's the person who got the most votes. You know, I don't know if Kevin was referring to Democrats like Lou Dobbs, who covered the voting machine sleepover, and that's what happened in down in San Diego, where they sent these voting machines home with poll workers for days and weeks prior to the election. Dobbs covered the issue last night, called it a threat to American democracy from within, called it mind-boggling, said, what in the world are we thinking about in this country? Then, of course, the other renowned Democrat, Roger Hedgecock, radio host, who sits in for Rush Limbaugh, who's also outraged about this. Look, this is just a matter of American democracy. I've said it many times over and over. It's not a matter of right and left. It's a matter of right and wrong. The plain fact is the registrar in San Diego cannot prove that his results are accurate in any way, shape, or form, period, because the machines were all sent home and must be presumed contaminated. If you need further evidence of that, you can look at that Democratic newspaper, USA Today, which has a front page article on a major new analysis of e-voting machines and finds that that there are more than 120 security threats to the three most commonly purchased electronic voting machines. That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm trying to ring the bell about and let folks know that when you run an election, as was run down in San Diego, just months after both California State and the federal certification body warned about these very machines, and they used Diebold machines in that entire county down there, they warned just two or three months ago that because of newly discovered vulnerabilities in these machines, the security on these things has to be airtight and they cannot be let out of secure custody. So when Lou Dobbs, again, last night, and we've got the video over at bradblog.com, shows a poll worker who gives us a tour of her garage near the paints where she stored the voting machines used in the June 6th primary election, the special runoff election for the U.S. House, you have to be concerned. And that's what we're talking about. And if your caller, Kevin, doesn't give a damn about democracy, doesn't want to make sure we have confidence in our elections and in our American democracy here, well, that's up to him. I feel otherwise, and I'm going to keep fighting for it, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican whose ox may be gored. I've reported on many Republicans, including just on that same day, June 6th, several Republicans who lost races after the optical scan ballots were counted, and they said, wait a minute, something's not right here. So they went back, did a manual hand count, and found that, in fact, those popular Republican incumbents who they thought had lost had actually won the race.
Very interesting. Well,
hardly sour grapes.
I did invite Kevin to come to the emergency town hall meeting in Oceanside tomorrow night. And so I don't confuse people, let me give it in sequence here.
Yeah.
Tonight in Los Angeles, 7:30 p.m. start time at the Venice United Methodist Church. That's at 1020 Victoria. And if you want to get more information, you can email blindhug@yahoo.com. That's blindhug, B-L-I-N-D-H-U-G, at yahoo.com. Pardon me, a $10 donation is requested at the door, and my screen just refreshed here, Brad, right in the middle.
I can help you out. The one that's Tuesday. That's tonight at 7:30 at the Venice United Methodist Church.
Right.
And in San Diego at the Oceanside Civic Center. So it's actually out in Oceanside.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow night, Wednesday, at June 28th at 7 p.m. There'll be a rally out front at 6 p.m. Folk organizers, I understand, are asking folks to dress in orange, if they are so inclined. We will be covering all of these. I'll be emceeing and keynoting, I suppose, both events.
Mm-hmm.
We will have a lot of folks there, Marcy Winograd, Mimi Kennedy from PDA and the California Election Protection Network, Rob Cohen.
The Progressive Democrats of America, just to
correct.
Explain the acronym. Go ahead.
Yes, and we have invited, by the way, the Progressive Republicans of America, but we found out there doesn't exist such a group. But anyway, Rob Cohen, one of the filmmakers from Votergate, will be there to show footage, actually, of 2004 of a poll worker in San Diego taking these voting machines home and peeling on and off the protective seals, and he'll be talking about his film upcoming, which shows all of these hacks that we've been talking about that helped reveal the massive vulnerabilities in the Diebold system. These guys actually were there when it happened and have it on tape, and it will be in their film.
And, Kevin, the Oceanside address is 330 North Coast Highway. That's the Oceanside Civic Center, 7 p.m. tomorrow. I hope you'll be there. And if you do decide to attend, go up and introduce yourself to Brad and tell him you're the Kevin who called in and talked to Peter B. Brad, thank you for the work you're doing. I hope you have great turnout for these events tonight and tomorrow. And I'll get a report from you on Friday.
I appreciate that, my friend. Thanks for ringing the bell out there.
You bet. Brad Friedman. And go to bradblog.com for all the information, including a link to the video of Lou Dobbs' report last night. Let's go to the phones now at 866-440-TOM. That's 866-440-THOM. Scott in San Diego, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Scott, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Go right ahead, sir.
I was, for some reason, anyway, Greg, I have two questions. I have two questions today. Number one, why did the DCCC ask Francine Busby to stand down and not pursue this questionable voting? And why is Brian Bilbray voting in Congress? If he can vote in Congress, can't I or my next-door neighbor or anyone else?
Well, I don't know the answer to the first question. I'm not sure what did occur between the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee and Francine Busby. It does appear that she is not contesting this, and I don't know if it is an attempt to curry favor with voters for the rerun in November. But I do agree with you that it's disappointing. Last week, I spoke with Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, a Democrat from the Chicago suburbs, and she went public with a very important statement. She embraced the findings of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and declared the Ohio presidential election of 2004 was, in her opinion, stolen. And Congresswoman Schakowsky apologized to people like Brad Friedman and others, you know, Bev Harris of Black Box Voting, who have been consistently raising the significant questions about the integrity of our voting system. And so I can say that there is only recently some awareness at the high levels of the Democratic infrastructure. And Congresswoman Schakowsky reported that her colleague Rahm Emanuel, the Chicago Democrat who is running the DCCC this year, actually read the RFK Jr. article on a plane while sitting next to her. So we know that there is some awareness there, and you know, we think that's a good thing.
I got one thing. I gotta say, I'm really angry about this whole thing. I spent time promoting Francine Busby, made phone calls, donated to her campaign, did a lot of work, and it's like my vote doesn't count. Now, I'm not afraid to walk up to people around here and ask them if they voted, and, you know, people in stores and stuff. And a lot of the younger people don't vote, from what I've heard, and the primary reason is their vote doesn't count. Well, you know, I know exactly how they feel. I worked hard, voted absentee. My vote doesn't seem to count. Francine didn't stand up for it.
Yeah. And your question about Bill Bray is a curious one to me, because to my knowledge, the results in San Diego has still not been certified.
Not certified until June 30th.
Yet he was sworn in by his Republican colleagues.
Yeah, and he is currently voting on issues. For example, giving the president line item veto on financial budget issues.
Mm-hmm.
Can I jump in?
Oh, Brad, go right ahead. I didn't know you're still here. Go ahead.
Yeah, Brad. They kept me on. I can answer real quickly to your question about Busby and the DCCC. They essentially told her, don't touch this voting machine issue prior to the election. And I'm going to tell people, you know, do not, frankly, not one damn dime to the DNC, the DCCC, or any candidates who don't come out strongly in favor of protecting our votes. It's
Thank you, Brad. Scott, thanks for the call. This is the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all.
Away from the hour on the Tom Hartman Program, I'm Peter B. Collins sitting in for Tom. We're taking your calls at 866-440-THOM, 866-440-THOM. 8466. And I want to remind you that today is National Clean Money Day. If you want to get full information on this, go to commoncause.org. They are organizing house parties all across the country for screenings on your television or your flat screen or your big screen, whatever you've got, of this powerful new documentary called The Big Buy, Tom DeLay's Stolen Congress. Two guys from Texas put this film together. They did a great job. I've seen it twice now. And it really is fascinating, as it tells the story of Tom DeLay, the Jack Abramoff connection, the K Street Project, and the greed and corruption that ultimately led to his departure from Congress. So I want to recommend that you get involved with this any way you can. Again, commoncause.org is where you can find information on the house parties tonight for Clean Money Day, coast to coast. And to your calls we go. Jim in Elkhart, Indiana. You're up first here. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B.
Yeah, Peter B. I don't understand why you're not a nationally syndicated radio talk show host. But I want to say that, like Robert De Niro said, you are very good. You know, you're smooth. You're as good as I've ever heard on the radio.
Well, Jim, thank you very much. We're working on that. I have my own radio program that is syndicated from the West Coast right now, and we're up on the satellite. We're available to every market in the country, and we're working to persuade program directors to pick up the Peter B. Collins Show. So thanks for that unsolicited commentary, and if you want to go to peterbcollins.com, that's where you can get information on my show.
Well, good on you. Oh,
Jim, don't break up. Don't go away. Call us back, Jim. We'll take your call when you reconnect. I guess he's out there on the open road. Now to Keith in Sutter, Florida. Hello, Keith. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi. I was thinking about starting the Frankenstein Party. And it's not actually a political party per se, but it's a party of people marching down the street with torches and pitchforks towards Washington.
Okay.
Because what are we supposed to do when, you know, a good progressive candidate, you know, gets on the ballot, and let's just say, for instance, everybody in the United States decided to vote for somebody like Ralph Nader who would actually challenge the status quo, but then these Diebold machines take over and cancel out our votes. When do we say enough is enough and just storm the Capitol?
Well, you make a good point, Keith. I don't know about your idea because it kind of sounds like Halloween every day. But we saw, for example, the American media and in general the public passively accept the stolen votes in Ohio in 2004. And just 2 weeks later, the Bush administration came to the aid of the people of the Ukraine and declared their election had been tainted. Now, the people in the Ukraine did actually take to the streets, and they wore orange vests and clothing. They called it an orange revolution, and it sent a message around the world about how their election had been rigged. And it's amazing because the standard that was used by the U.S. administration to determine that we would challenge the results of that tainted election was the exit polling. Yet the exit polling from 2004 in Ohio and other states clearly showed huge variances that go beyond a margin of error, go beyond statistical probabilities to demonstrate that the, you know, exit polls were correct and the published results were skewed. And we were screwed because the results were skewed.
Yeah, it's amazing.
All right, Kim, let me know when you start your march, and I'll send some people your way.
All right, get your pitchfork ready.
Thanks for your call. Now to Mark in Fort Lauderdale. Hello, Mark. You're on the Tom Hartman program. I'm Peter B.
Hello, Peter. I have to agree with the caller two calls ago. You're very running smoothly and very distinct, and you're making it very easy for the listeners to listen to.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I am actually a clerk down here in Broward County. And I do love doing it. You know, it makes me feel good to do the job. But I actually watched one of our machines switch. When the person hit carry, I actually watched it switch its X to Bush.
No.
And I saw, and we turned around, and I canceled the ballot on the machine, started over again, it did it again, I canceled that ballot. I then eventually wound up shutting the machine down, and calling and they said, oh, no, just shut it down. It's okay. And I think to myself, how many voters didn't notice it? Because this voter saw it happen, and he brought it to my attention as the clerk. My responsibility to make sure that it didn't happen again, so I kept sat there and watched it.
Now, two questions. Have you ever witnessed a vote switch the other direction? Did you ever see one that flipped a Bush vote to Kerry?
Nobody ever told me they did. It happened.
Okay.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I am a proud U.S. veteran of the Air Force. I love my country. That doesn't mean I have to love the administration I work for that's running this country. But how can we not be frightened of the people that are in charge when things like the wiretapping and the financial data collections is happening? How can we not think that these people aren't doing this stuff?
When you connect all the dots, it's a little scary, but it does give you the big picture. And
I'm a 44-year-old adult. I'm not stupid. I was born at night, but not last night.
All right, Mark, you're a great American. I want to encourage you to email Brad at bradblog.com and tell him your story, will you?
I will.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Mark. All right, we're wrapping up this hour. We're going to do it again next hour. We're going to meet Jim Derrick, who's written Confessions of a Former Ditto Head. Perfect timing after Rusty ran afoul of the law at the Miami airport yesterday. It was only Viagra, no OxyContin. Or at least that's what we're told so far. That's coming up next hour. Thanks for joining me. I'm Peter B. Collins here on the Tom Hartman Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco, sitting in for Tom Hartman again today. And Tom lost his father over the weekend. He is in Michigan with his family at this very difficult time. And the burial is tomorrow. He will be back on the air on Friday, he tells me. And tomorrow you hear the best of Tom Hartman. And on Thursday, I'll be here again, sitting in for Tom, and I'm very much looking forward to that. Your calls and comments are welcome always at 866-440-TOM, 866-440-THOM. You can also email me directly, peter@peterbcollins.com. We're joined now by Jim Derrick. He is a guy who tells us straight up he's a former Ditto Head. He's written a book called Confessions of a Former Ditto Head. And he blogs on the Internet, including contributions to Daily Kos. And, Jim, I want to welcome you to our program today.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. My thoughts and prayers are with Tom and his family.
Thank you very much. And the timing here, I did not schedule this, and I have to confess that I haven't had a chance to read your book yet. I look forward to doing so. I'll invite you on my radio show to talk about it after I've had a chance to read the book.
Fantastic. But, you know, I'm going to be in San Francisco in a few weeks.
Oh, really? Good.
Yeah.
Well, we'll definitely connect.
Great.
Now, Jim, the timing, as I noted, I didn't set this up, but yesterday, Rush Limbaugh. Rush was coming back in a private jet in the secure aviation area of Miami International, and it's curious because I've always thought that there's much less security for these private corporate type jets, but Rush was intercepted and they examined his luggage, and because he is on probation from his OxyContin addiction scandal, he was detained by the authorities for 3 hours, and they came up with a bottle of Viagra that didn't have his name on it.
Yeah, you know, sometimes the jokes just write themselves, and those are the easy days. But my first thought when I read that report was that he was coming back from the Dominican Republic, and, you know, my understanding of being on, you know, probation or parole or what have you is that you're not really allowed to leave the state, much less the country, without some sort of business in the area or permission in advance. I mean, they kind of want to know where you are and where you're going.
Right.
And the fact that he was able to, A, go to the Dominican Republic, and, B, come back with prescription drugs with someone else's name on it, just kind of tells me how seriously they're taking this issue with Rush, and that's not, you know, that doesn't seem to be very seriously at all. I mean, if you or I were to do that.
Well, I do understand that he paid top dollar for his parole ankle bracelet GPS unit,
okay.
And he got the Tiffany's version with the diamond studs.
That's excellent. That's the one that you want to have. That's the one that you want to have. And, you know, it's times like this that I'm almost worthless as a former Ditto head, because I've been out. I just got my 2-year pin back in February, where I'd been a Democrat for 2 years. And, you know, now I look at these things that Rush says and does, and I'm like, my God, can you believe it? I mean, it's insane. How do people believe this? And I have to remember, crap, I used to be that guy.
Now, did you go into political recovery about the time Rush went into rehab?
No, actually, the two had very little to do with one another. In fact, I remember when that whole thing happened. I mean, it started out, I thought the more damning statement or the more damning thing that happened at about the time Rush went into his rehab stint was, you know, saying that Donovan McNabb wasn't a very good quarterback, which at the time I just thought was ridiculous. But, you know, apolitical. It had nothing to do with his politics. From the actual, you know, drug use side, you kind of have the, you know, the old, you know, Christian, you know, forgive and forget, and, you know, like, you know, the great thing was is that he, at the time that he first admitted this problem and first went into his first stint in rehab, he basically came out and owned it, which is what you wanted him to do if you were a conservative, if you were a Ditto head. You wanted him to, you know, I take personal responsibility for this. This is my problem, and it's not a disease, and I'm going to take care of it. But the thing that he said that I thought was just absolutely great was he came out and said, not, you know, I screwed up, I'm so ashamed, God help me and my family, but he came out and said, look, I don't want you to think of me as a hero, because I'm not. I'm going into rehab, but don't think of me as a hero. And I'm like, man, what a great way to frame that, you know?
Yeah.
Just assume that we all think you're a hero for having this problem and for taking care of it. That's just a great way to frame it. The man's a master of the language.
We're talking with Jim Derrick. His book is Confessions of a Former Ditto Head, and his website is xdittohead.com. And I'm looking at the screen right now, and you went to the yearly Coast Seminar.
I did. I was a panelist at Yearly Coast.
And you wrote up an item about the Rush Limbaugh call seminar at Yearly Coast.
I did.
And I find this very interesting. So what are your best techniques for getting through to Rushbo and actually getting on the EIB radio network?
The guy who is the king, the undisputed king of getting on Rush's show, his name is Mike Stark. He's not hiding from anybody. His name is Mike. It really is Mike Stark. And he runs a website called callingallwingnuts.com. He's a stay-at-home dad. He just calls and calls and calls. And the funny thing is, when I was a Ditto head, Rush used to get these kind of unbalanced liberal callers who were just really, really aggravated. He didn't come across very good to the Ditto head nation. They just sort of filled the stereotype of the right. of the angry liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And Rush would describe them as being seminar callers. Now, indicating, and he sort of said that, you know, the DNC has these seminars to get people onto the show. Mike's event at Yearly Coast was sort of the first ever actual seminar that I attended that was saying how to get on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the
the nefarious things that Mike Stark was telling people were, you know, were things like, be honest about why you called and who you are. Don't do the bait and switch where you say, yeah, I love Rush, I think he's great, and then you get on the air and just...
I want to talk about how great Dick Cheney is.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to go hunting with him.
I would love to. See, that's the kind of thing he will, as the host, dismiss your call and say this is a bait and switch, and he's within his rights to do that. It's his show. Mm-hmm. He can do whatever he wants. You just mm-hmm. be honest, because he always does put liberals to the front of the line. Now, that means liberals who get by the screener, which generally means unbalanced callers who don't sound very good on the air, who don't represent their points very well. But, you know, be honest about why you called. You're going to have to hit redial a lot. And be respectful when you're on the air. Those are the three things that Mike basically said. He said it's going to be really hard, but just try to be respectful and try to conduct a measured debate.
I spent several years on a radio station in San Francisco where I had the dubious distinction of following Rush Limbaugh every day.
Boy.
So I got all the ditto head backdraft and overflow.
Right.
And then I got my audience with Rush himself. And this was one of the most bizarre radio encounters I've ever had, because I was sitting there interviewing this guy, and the station manager and my boss, the program director, were sitting in a booth where they had direct line of sight to Rush, and they were cheering him on. And I was there trying to be polite enough, because after all, you know, he's on our station. I couldn't just lower the boom on him.
Sure,
but
yeah.
I asked him about the callers to his program, and here's what he told me.
I look at my show as an entertainment forum for people, and I screen calls to find the best call. You know what the main, in my philosophy, you know what the purpose of a good call is on my show? It's to make me look good.
Make him look good.
I will tell you flat out, this show is not about what anybody else but me thinks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to discover what America thinks, because it's impossible. There's no talk show host in the world who can tell you what his community or his neighborhood thinks based on what happens on his show. And so I'm not even laboring under that misconception. Calls are there to make me look good, to bring up interesting things. There's no public service aspect. There's no First Amendment aspect that I care about regarding it. We're not looking for people who agree. In fact, we strive for people who disagree.
We'll talk more about that as we continue. Had to take a break there. So you get the idea, and he brags about that.
Yeah.
That, hey, you know, callers are there to make me look good.
Yeah, and he says it on the air. It's not like something that he's just admitting in this sort of side Q&A session. He'll say on the air, the whole purpose of the caller is to make me look good. On his website, you know, he wants somebody who will either make a point that dovetails with something that he's already said or fit into one of the pretty little boxes that he's already established for what he thinks about liberals and Democrats. You know, we'll put you either in the angry box or the big government box or the higher taxes box or whatever box we can filter you into.
Now, Jim, are ditto heads aware, for example, of what I call the Limbaugh fade? A caller gets on, gets to make one exchange with Rush about the topic, and then the caller is faded under, or just dropped, and Rush continues to talk as if the caller's still there, and at the end says, thanks for your call.
Yeah.
But the caller's been off the air for, you know, minutes, if not days.
Yeah, you know, exactly right. No, you're exactly right. And I'm aware, and Rush makes you aware, you know, these people have been waiting for an hour, 45 minutes or whatever, and makes no bones about it. I'll tell you that as a Ditto head, it was actually one of the sadder moments in my life as a Ditto head fan whenever he would take a caller. Because you didn't really want to hear what callers thought. You wanted to hear what Rush thought. And a caller just sort of gets in the way of his commenting on the news or on, you know, on different aspects, different elements, different things. You're taking time away from his commentary. I don't listen to hear what the callers think. I listen to hear what he thinks.
But doesn't the monologue get boring?
It never did for me. I tell you, he's a very entertaining guy on the radio. I mean, you know, or at least he used to be. I think he used to be very funny. And I don't know if I don't think he's funny anymore because I'm not a conservative anymore, or if I don't think he's funny anymore because his show just really isn't that funny. I mean, you can only demonize the left for so long and make that the focal point of everything that's wrong in the country when you control every element of government.
Jim Derrick, Confessions of a Former Ditto Head. He spells his last name D-E-R-Y-C-H. And go to xdittohead.com to get more information. Jim, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Peter, thanks for having me on.
More of your calls coming up here on the Tom Hartman Program. Sitting in today for Tom, I'm Peter B. Collins.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
HOM, or if you like it all digits, 866-440-8466 puts you through to the program. Florindo in New York, welcome. This is Peter B., and you're on the air. Hi, Florindo. There you go.
Yeah, hi, Peter. How you doing?
Doing fine. Thank you.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm sorry to hear about Tom's father, and I send my sympathy to his family, as I'm sure all the listeners do.
Thank you for that.
I heard Brad on your show, and I had to call in because, first of all, I'm very excited about the work he's doing. I want to give him a plug.
Mm-hmm.
I found out about that San Diego machine thing. He's the one who really broke the story. But more important than that for me right now is that the New York City Council is considering two resolutions, 228 and 131. One urges public testing before buying new voting machines.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a problem for the New York City Council. They don't want to pass a resolution that requires them to test the machines publicly before committing to buy 10,000 of them, believe it or not. Additionally, there's also that proposes using paper ballot optical scans
mm-hmm.
as a requirement for New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason I'm mentioning this is because Teresa Hummel, who is, I guess, the president or director of Where'sThePaper.org, explained to me that with an electronic voting machine, a DRE, there are really three different ballots. There's the ballot you see on the screen, the ballot that gets printed out on a piece of paper as a receipt or record,
mm-hmm.
and there's the ballot that gets stored electronically in the machine and that gets ultimately counted as your vote.
Right, and it's held in a buffer or a memory in the machine and then also copied onto the memory card.
Right, and it's so not anything that's transparent. It's not observable. What you see on the screen or what gets printed out aren't necessarily the same thing as the ballot that gets counted.
That is possible, yes.
And that's one of the problems with electronic voting machines and why I'm mentioning this business about the New York City Council and these resolutions.
Mm-hmm.
That if anybody in the New York area is hearing this show, and I'm sure some of your listeners are, please contact your city council rep and have them urge them to adopt resolutions 228 and 131. 131 is one for optical scan. Paper
mm-hmm.
ballots. And again, the name of the expert who educated me on this is Teresa Hummel, H-U-M-M-E-L.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody can Google her or look up her website, Where's the Paper?
Okay, great. Florindo, I appreciate that, and I'm glad you care about these issues. And I hope you will stay engaged, because we've got a real fight on our hands here. And
yeah, this is the big one.
Well, and what you're talking about in New York brings up to me that New York might set a salutary standard on the use of these machines, but we
right.
don't have standardized voting even across counties, cities, or states, much less national standards that are unified and consistent. And what we saw in Florida, the patchwork where county by county, the systems are different, and recounts would be conducted differently. We really need to get a grip on this, and it has to be a standardized system that does permit local control and local variation, but still delivers to us a product that is consistent, that is transparent, that is auditable, and that can be trusted by every American. And we
yes.
don't have that today, and too many of our political leaders of both parties are oblivious to the significance of this issue.
Right. Yeah, that's very well said. I think Keith Olbermann referred to our system as the Rube Goldberg voting system.
Yeah. Florindo, thanks a lot. Hey,
thank
a quick
you
question. Do you have any advice for me? I got a parking ticket when I was in New York City back in April, and I was not parked at the location the ticket says. Can I
just write in on the ticket what your dispute is and mail it in, and you know, then you can negotiate with them, or write a letter explaining everything very well, and they might let it go.
You think they might actually dismiss it?
My wife is an expert at getting off of tickets that way.
Uh huh. All right.
Well,
okay. I appreciate the encouragement. Thanks.
Thank
now
you.
To Eleanor in Montague, Massachusetts. Hello, Eleanor. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program. This is Peter.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for standing in for Tom.
Well, it's my honor to do it.
You know something? I think in November, the American people have one of two choices only, and it's not Republican or Democrat. The choice is either restore a constitutional republic or install a fascist dictator, period. That's the choice. And I really am very, very concerned about what's going to happen in November, because I haven't heard much from Congress on this matter, the U.S. Congress.
Oh, they have much more important things to take up, like banning burning of the flag.
You know, what a shame this is. But I think, you know, for anyone who's a Republican, and as a matter of fact, I voted for George Herbert Walker Bush. I voted for Reagan. I hate to even admit this, but I voted for George Bush in 2000.
Mm-hmm.
I would say to any fellow Republican at this point that this is really about the Constitution. And, you know, you may consider yourself a Republican, but that doesn't mean...
Eleanor, I got to go. Thank you for a powerful call here on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I'm proud to be an American. I'm proud of all the good things we've done. This television, free words, and rock and rolls, and an old Times Square, Jim and Derek, and we're well and okay, better. Price reduction, reconstruction, peace, score, and lots of old culture that we got to live.
Yeah, but what about Old Glory? Our pandering elected officials in the United States Senate, and I'm sorry to say, members of both parties, have been telling us over the last few days just how proud they are to be Americans and how that is connected inextricably to protecting the American flag. And I find this so offensive that our elected leaders would pander to nationalist instincts and try to protect a symbol when we believe that free speech trumps symbolic behavior. And I just find it extraordinary that we now have 66, perhaps 67 votes, if Jay Rockefeller gets out of the hospital in time, to pass a constitutional amendment proposal from the United States Senate that would amend the Constitution to permit them to pass legislation banning desecration of the American flag. What better way to encourage protesters, anyone with an anti-American perspective, to decide to desecrate the flag, make it against the law, ratchet up the penalties. That will encourage skinheads and other people who are disaffected and who wish to get your attention by trashing the flag. That's the unintended consequence of this legislation. And we have these sanctimonious senators. Get up there. Yesterday I flipped on C-SPAN. I could only stomach about 10 minutes, and there was Arlen Specter, Republican from Pennsylvania, connecting the flag with wounded soldiers from Iraq. And in my view, he got it absolutely backwards. Because he tried to play the emotional card of wounded veterans of Walter Reed, and that he's passing this constitutional amendment in sync with those who have been wounded in Iraq. Well, I believe they went there to fight, in part, for the freedom of Americans to express their dissent. And I've never burned a flag. I've never desecrated a flag. I have never wanted to injure people who have a strong affinity, a deep loyalty to the flag itself. I understand the layers of the relationship, and I understand that there are many people who feel passionately about the flag itself. But to add a constitutional amendment and then legislation that would provide for penalties for people who desecrate the flag, in my view, is fundamentally un-American. And there's so many other so important issues. I mean, New Orleans isn't underwater anymore, but it may as well be. In the situation in Iraq, we had the phony debate last week to try to wedge voters into the Republican column. And this is just an extension of that. It really, really bugs me. I'd like to hear your thoughts. And in particular, if you support this constitutional amendment, you go to the front of the line. I'd like to hear from you because I don't get it. And I don't know exactly who they're pandering to. Because when I talk to people, even decorated veterans, they say, I certainly don't support desecration of the flag, but we don't need a constitutional amendment to protect it. So let me hear from you. 866-440-THOM. That's 866-440-8466. Puts you through to the Tom Hartman program. John in Sacramento, welcome. This is Peter B.
Yes, this doesn't actually apply to what you're talking about, but to your previous caller. This is just smoke and mirrors, and it's just a distraction. What's really going on right now and what we should be talking about is the Busbee-Bilbray election in San Diego that was, you know, possibly another fixed election.
Mm-hmm. We talked about that last hour. Perhaps you were listening.
Okay. And one of the things I wanted to comment about this is Democrats have to start accepting responsibility for this. There's an article written how Democrats enabled Republicans to steal the 2004 presidential election. It's on the Online Review of Books, archived in the December 2004 section. And the article makes the point, essentially, that when the Help Americans Voting Act, HAVA, came into effect in 2002, the Democrats were asleep at the wheel. And they let the Republicans dictate the whole thing and made allowed Diebold at that time to and ES&S to become the premier sellers of this. And when they distributed the billions of dollars to the state governments, they were already on the inner track, and the state governments were buying all this stuff. Now, regarding California, Kevin Shelley, who was the Democratic Secretary of State before Schwarzenegger got in, he decertified Diebold machines because he knew what was coming. But what happened when Schwarzenegger got in, he put in Bruce McPherson, who was another Republican.
Well, and let's not skip one step here. Kevin Shelley took himself out of office through a tainted campaign finance scheme where he used what was the equivalent of an earmark to send money to a nonprofit in San Francisco, and that nonprofit then donated large amounts, or they gave it to people who donated amounts to Shelley's campaign. So it's very disappointing because he was right on the voting machines, but he was corrupt in his own right.
Yeah, but one thing doesn't disqualify the other. Yeah, I agree. He was a crook in that way.
No, I just want listeners outside of California to hear the whole story and understand that Kevin Shelley destroyed himself.
Yeah, but don't you think he had a lot of help in doing that? Don't you think that they were zeroing in on it? Who do you think instigated all that? I mean, you know,
The San Francisco Chronicle investigated his campaign finance. That's where it started.
No, I know, but I mean, don't you think the Republicans were urging writers and people to go away? I'm not defending Shelley. Okay, that's getting off the point.
Yeah, well, let's not. So go ahead.
But the point is that once McPherson got in, who was a Republican appointed by Schwarzenegger, he recertified the Diebold machines.
Well, and he did so after promising public input and public hearings, and he even invited Harry Hursty to come in and hack a machine and then backed out on that.
Right.
And his certification came over a weekend without any real public input.
Right. But now here's the – and this gets to the nexus of what I'm talking about. Democrats keep complaining about this. They keep, filing lawsuits and having public meetings. That's all well and good, but something needs to be done about it. And here's my suggestion. Okay, everyone.
Right.
They say you want a suggestion. Here it is. I suggest for the Democratic Party and all their major contributors who have billions of dollars, like Buffett and people who are distributing money across the board, to in the next election, this coming up in November, they should hire a security force to monitor every polling place, every Diebold machine, every Republican operative who has anything to do with the election. And I don't mean like minimum wage workers or rent-a-cops. They should have really a qualified security force with some hard-ass lawyers and some hard-ass guys named Guido and Tony watching over the process. Because, I mean, we know now, the liberals and progressives know what the Bush administration is all about. They're crooks and fascists. And how do you deal with crooks and fascists? You have to be as tough or tougher than they are.
So we need our own Blackwater Hessian
exactly.
stormtroopers. All right, John, thanks a lot. I appreciate your call today. Richard in Seattle, you're next on the Tom Hartman program. Go right ahead.
Hey, Peter B., how you doing?
Doing great today, thank you.
Well, my condolences to Tom, too.
Yes, thank you.
I just wanted to say regarding the flag-burning amendment,
uh-huh.
I've always called that just the most smoke and mirrors thing that they could ever tout out. I recall how Bush, when he's taking the guy who's sworn in office to defend one of our institutional liberties and symbols, and nobody lifts a finger to say anything about that, and yet they're screaming about flag burning.
Well, and I think you mentioned Bush. I think maybe Bush issued a signing statement right after he took the oath of office, saying that he would only apply that selectively.
Yeah. And to people who say that Democrats need to stop whining about the election, I live in Washington State, and we had this incredible drawn-out thing
yes,
where the
did.
Republican loser just did every legal shenanigans to win.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's both sides. It's not just Democrats who have sour grapes. If you lose, you'll use any means necessary to push.
Well, and if you lose, and if there are serious questions, I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican, you should pursue the issue to its final point.
Absolutely.
You should make sure that every vote is counted and that the actual winner is, hey, the actual winner. Richard, thanks for your call. We'll take more calls in a moment. Join me on the Tom Hartman program at 866-440-TOM. From San Francisco, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Everybody's doing it in my face, telling me I gotta make a change. All I ever hear day and night is, you better hurry up and get a life. I need some direction, but the clock is ticking away.
Ticking here on the Tom Hartman program. I'm Peter B. Collins sitting in for Tom today. Greg Gorman joins us from Talk Radio News Service. Hi, Greg.
Well, hi, Peter. How are you?
Just fine. We've been talking about the flag-burning debate. Anything new developing there in the Senate today? Do they have the 67th vote?
Well, you know, it looks like they may be very, very close to having enough votes, which is quite interesting. And, you know, as the Senate continues the debate, we'll obviously know more about how close they are, but it looks like they may only be one or two votes short at this point.
And has anybody come up with any novel new debate arguments, or is it just rehashing the same old stuff?
You know what? It's rehashing. It's politics. It's, you know, trying to divert away from health care and immigration and North Korea and Iraq and Iran, and it's all about the midterm elections.
Yes, it is.
Hard to believe, but you know what? We're actually talking about whether we can burn the American flag when there are at least eight other major things to talk about.
Oh, indeed. Now, one of the other issues in Washington is the administration's sallies against the New York Times. Seems to be carefully orchestrated, the vice president and the president both lobbing some verbal grenades at the New York Times over its disclosure of their interception of financial transactions and the SWIFT Center in Europe. Anything new on that, Greg?
Well, yeah, this morning I was at the White House, you know, for the morning gaggle with Tony Snow. And he pretty much, you know, said what the president said, that it was disgraceful, that it was, you know, leaked out. But he was asked, is the White House going to move ahead with any kind of investigation, you know, especially, you know, with a criminal investigation? And he said that it was inappropriate for the White House to make that call, that, you know, it would come through Treasury and Justice, but that, you know, it could happen and the New York Times could face criminal charges.
Mm-hmm. Well, I fully support their right to publish it, and I think that the administration is once again playing to the bleachers. And unfortunately, in my view, they have managed to rally enough people to say, we're not actually going through your records, therefore you have nothing to worry about, therefore relax. We're just violating the privacy of people you don't know.
Well, you know, and to that point, Tony Snow even said that there are plenty of people on both sides of the aisle who agree with the president in saying that this is disgraceful, but he didn't go into any of the names. So, you know, they are doing a good job at rallying the base and thumping the base and trying to get people to understand that they're doing this and it's legal. And, you know, what the New York Times did is going to hurt our country.
Yeah. Well, Greg, thanks for checking in today. Good to talk to you.
Always a pleasure, Peter.
Greg Gorman at Talk Radio News Service. Now let's jump to David in Blaine, Washington. Hello, David. You're on the Tom Hartman program, and this is Peter B.
Oh, wow, you're just hitting on all cylinders. Your last callers were just incredible. You know, there's been five different versions of the flag prior to this one, since before 1776. You know, I think a lot of people have forgotten about that. And so, like, you know, it is a smokescreen. You know, and I think that all the progressive shows and all the callers need to be just calling in every show and just hitting that nerve that really gets under the skin of Bush and Cheney, because they're secretive. They cannot be trusted for a second, anything that comes out of this administration.
Now, David, you know the history of the flag. Let me ask you about this. I find it rather curious. You may know that there are protocols for handling the flag, and they're quite detailed.
Mm-hmm.
And when a flag is worn out and faded and ready to be taken out of service, what is the recommended manner that flag be destroyed?
You know, I don't know that answer, but
it's burning.
Wow, that makes sense.
Now,
I mean, it's a form of purification.
Right. So, are we going to give incineration permits to people who want to sincerely and properly dispose of an old flag? And will that, you know, have to give you an exclusion from prosecution under the new legislation that would come out of this proposed constitutional amendment?
Wow. And so this is a congressman, someone, whoever brought up this ridiculous idea to amend the Constitution and waste the people's time, you know, when all of our tax money is being spent to wage this destructive killing field in Iraq and in the Middle East and God knows wherever, anywhere else. And all the torturing that's going on in our name, you know. So all these people that don't vote, please motivate yourselves and get informed.
Thank you very much, David. Good to have your call on the program today. This just in, the rival Hamas and Fatah movements have agreed on a plan implicitly recognizing Israel. Now, this is a potential significant breakthrough here. Fatah and Hamas officials praised the agreement. It's been overshadowed by a crisis. You know, there's an abducted Israeli soldier, and Israeli tanks have lined up to try to put pressure on the Palestinians. And this appears to bypass the threat of a referendum that was put forward by the Fatah President Mahmoud Abbas. So good news coming out of the occupied territories there in the Middle East today. Ken in Seattle, thanks for calling. You're on the Tom Hartman program. Go ahead, Ken.
It's a pleasure to be on your program here. Just want to make a quick comment. I'm not very articulate. I hope I get my point across here. But maybe
you're doing okay so far, Ken.
Maybe you can comment on it. But, you know, all this amendment to
about the flag burning thing, you know, if they get that passed and put it in the Constitution, to me it's kind of like you're kind of disrespecting the Constitution. You're kind of using it as a political toy, and you're not really respecting the Constitution either.
I agree. I do not believe that the Constitution should be amended to limit the rights of individuals, whether it's the rights of same-sex couples to marry or the right, even though I deplore it, of an individual to express him or herself by defacing the American flag. I just think that it's wrong-headed, and the Constitution and the amendments should be about expanding freedoms. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Tom Hartmann Program. We're going to continue on all of these same stations, so I hope you'll stay tuned. Joining me right after the top of the hour, Thomas Lindsay,
an environmental lawyer. You've been listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Check our website at www.tomhartmann.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartmann.
Welcome to this hour of the Tom Hartmann Program. Sitting in for Tom again today, I'm Peter B. Collins, and if you haven't heard the news, Tom is off most of this week as his father died over the weekend, and Tom is in Lansing, Michigan with the family. And we all send our best wishes and condolences to Tom, Louise, and the entire Hartmann clan. And if you'd like to extend greetings or comments at this difficult time, you can go to tomhartmann.com, click on the forums link, and then there is a link to Tom's nationally syndicated radio show. You click on that, and the thread will come up where you could post a comment that will reach Tom. And please don't email him directly, because it could just swamp the Hartmann inbox, and he's planning to be back on the air this Friday if everything works out. So we do send our best wishes, thoughts, and prayers to Tom at this difficult time. We'll be taking more of your calls here shortly. If you want to get on the line at 866-440-TOM, 866-440-8466. You can email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com, and that's the website where you can find out about my syndicated radio show on the West Coast. That's peterbcollins.com. Joining us now is Thomas Lindsay. He is co-founder of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, a nonprofit that provides free and affordable legal services to grassroots groups, municipal governments, and they look for creative legal strategies to try to limit the political power and other power of corporations in our country. Tom Lindsay, welcome to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having us.
It's nice to talk with you. First up, I'm real curious about the Democracy School that you run. These are weekend seminars. Give us a sketch of how these work and what you cover.
Well, the Democracy School has really taken off over the past 2 years. We actually had our first school back in 2003. And essentially, they're activist training schools. We've taught 90 of them up to this point in time, and they're being taught at a dozen locations across the United States. But essentially, they're for community groups and community activists who have had enough of being trapped in the regulatory system, in other words, being regulated in terms of communities that are fighting quarries and toxic waste dumps and factory hog farms and a whole litany of different issues, who come to the Democracy School to find out why, when they attempt to put together or envision the sustainable community that they want, that they run into a bunch of different hurdles. And so the Democracy Schools really answer the question of why those hurdles are there, and what to do about them.
Mm-hmm. And give us a sense how often these are conducted and if they're done regionally, that sort of thing.
Well, we're booked right now all the way through to the end of 2006. They're running every weekend, places like Anchorage, Alaska, Boston College up in Massachusetts, running in New Hampshire as well. A bunch of different locations that are up on our webpage. But we've been, flabbergasted by the degree of interest that there's been in the Democracy Schools. Essentially, the schools were established to assist folks in grassroots campaigns who are working on different issues.
And I'm looking at your website right now. I want to give people the URL. It's celdf.org. and that stands for Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, CELDF.org. And right there in the upper right corner is a button you can click on to get more information on Democracy School and register if you would like.
Yes, and we would welcome any inquiries for folks. There's different costs for different schools across the country. We have a 365-page curriculum that we go through fairly quickly from Friday night to Sunday afternoon. And, in fact, we're now doing trainings for organizations, boards of organizations who are interested in adopting a different kind of organizing approach rather than be trapped working within state and federal regulatory agencies. And, in fact, it's that work that really started us out because, in fact, someone much smarter than me a number of years ago said an important phrase that I still remember, which is that the only thing that environmental regulations regulate is environmentalists. In other words, they regulate how we respond when a quarry corporation seeks to drive a quarry operation into our community or a toxic waste incinerator corporation attempts to drive something into our community as well. And so it really starts from that point about why is it so difficult as community activists or community groups that come together who are first-time activists to actually get what they want,
mm-hmm.
and whether that's stopping the facility from coming in, whether that's envisioning what sustainable agriculture looks like and using local laws to actually achieve that vision. The question was, why is it so difficult in this country for folks who have a different vision for agriculture and for energy and for all these different issues that we work on, why is it so difficult to get that work done at the local level?
Yeah, and I'd like to single out some listeners to this program on KGOE in Eureka, California. Eureka Arcata is a hotbed of activists, and they've had challenges from a resource extractor called Pacific Lumber that, of course, is trying to clear-cut some of the old-growth stands and has interfered in local politics in many ways. They funded recently a misguided and failed recall attempt against the district attorney in Humboldt County. And just this June, they passed a ballot measure that restricts corporations from dumping large amounts of money into local initiatives. And I salute them for it because I think it's a novel approach. David Cobb, who was the Green Party presidential nominee in 2004 and helped us all out by sponsoring the partial recall that occurred in Ohio, David Cobb is a part of a group up there of activists, and they've been doing a lot of great work along the same lines here of trying to challenge and trim the sails of corporate power.
What's fascinating about the collective work that's happening about folks taking on corporate rights is really that the work that they're doing is in many ways unconstitutional. And it's funny to say that sometimes because people gasp and they say, oh, it's unconstitutional. Well, in Pennsylvania, we have 100 communities that have passed ordinances that we've drafted to eliminate agribusiness corporations and sewage sludge corporations from communities across Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, two of our communities have passed binding law as early as 2001 that strip corporations of constitutional powers at the local level.
Yeah.
In other words, the U.S. Supreme Court has declared that corporations are persons and that they have a litany of 14th Amendment Commerce Clause, Contracts Clause rights in the text of the Constitution. And so when communities act to withdraw or eliminate power from corporations at the local level, they're automatically acting against the Constitution, how the Constitution has been interpreted by the Supreme Court. And so I think what you're seeing across this land is a revolt of sorts. It's a rebellion by communities who are unwilling to live with a vision of energy or agriculture or whatever the specific issue area is
mm-hmm.
That's being defined for them, and instead they're striking out on their own and building a new structure of law, because I think that in the end is what this work is all about, that the existing U.S. Constitution is really a property and commerce document.
Mm-hmm.
It places property and commerce above rights of nature, community, and people. And it's the default. It's like the DNA that operates here in this country, which makes it so difficult for us to do anything at the local level.
Yeah, indeed. We're talking with Thomas Lindsay, co-founder of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. And, Tom, let's see if this works. We have Susie on the line. Alex, add Susie, if you would. And she's calling in from Oregon. And her concern is about the salmon run this year and the way power companies are hurting the interests of fishermen. Susie, welcome to our program.
Hello.
And since we have a grassroots environmental attorney with us right now, I just thought we'd see what your issue is and see what he might recommend. So give us a quick sketch of the problem you see there with the Salmon Run.
I was actually commenting yesterday. You stated or seemed to imply that what's going on with the salmon situation, not having a salmon season in California this year, had to do with totally with overfishing. And I wanted to point out that there's more going on in that situation that has to do with protecting corporate interests and our current administration that that people are not aware of necessarily. And that would be that in the past, power companies were required to maintain mitigation hatcheries to replace the habitat lost by the dams, and that was a condition of doing business and generating income off of our rivers. And our Bush administration in January came out with a new plan. They ditched the Clinton plan, which indicated that the impact of dams was going to have to be considered in any recovery plan. Well, the Bush administration reclassified, for instance, the Columbia River dams as, what do they call it, part of the environmental landscape, they were just dropped by the ice age there, you know, and said we were no longer going to require the power companies to maintain these mitigation hatcheries or do fish ladders on their dams to help the salmon. We were just going to take a more direct approach to the salmon problem, which is catch less fish.
Susie, let me stop you there because we're tight for time. Tom Lindsay, do you have any advice for Susie on the best way to deal with these issues?
Well, I think there's some general themes. Actually, when we put together campaigns, we spend a weekend doing so. So just a thumbnail is that, at least from our organizing standpoint, we think it's time to abandon the federal and state governments because they're certainly not working in the interests of communities, especially on these types of issues. But it's a perfect example of how people get channeled like cattle down a chute into a place where the industry and the agencies that govern these types and write these types of rules tell people that they're not serious unless they become experts on water quantity and water quality and recovery plans and all the data that goes into all that work. And we come at it from a little different perspective in that it all revolves around municipal organizing and the authority to make law at the local level. And because in many ways we were powerless to work at any other level of government at this point because indeed we work in a corporate state.
Well, I think that's a very interesting angle. Susie, I hope that's helpful, and I thank you for your contributions, both of you, Tom Lindsay and Susie the caller. You can get more information at celdf.org. Tom, thanks for your work.
Thank you, Peter.
All right. We'll take a break and continue on the Tom Hartman Program. Join me at 866-440-8466. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Segment of the Tom Hartman Program. That's from The Dark Side of the Moon. I think that was the album that spent the longest as number one on the Billboard top LP chart, something like 200 weeks or something like that. Came up in a trivia game last week, and I lost. That's why I have it fresh on the top of my mind. We're taking your calls, so you can join me and comment on any subject in the news. 866-440-TOM, 866-440-THOM. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom Hartman again today. You'll hear the best of Tom Hartman tomorrow. I'll be here on Thursday, and then Tom is expecting to be back live with you starting on Friday this week. Let's go back to your calls. Joe in Brookings, Oregon, welcome. Join us here on the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, I was just wondering, everything that's going on with globalization and immigration, as far as the flag-burning issue goes, I wonder, would it be against the law, to burn the Mexican flag or an American flag made in China? I mean, I'm just wondering, this whole thing with the flag-burning is asinine.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm just listening to you. You're right. It is asinine.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Orrin Hatch, this is, Orrin Hatch is the one coming up with this. He's the same moron, I mean, excuse me, he's the same Mormon, you know, who also wants to change the Constitution just for one man, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was born in a foreign country, just so Arnie can run for president. I mean,
but Joe, I do take exception to your citing the Mormon issue with Senator Hatch. I don't think that has any bearing on his wrongheadedness.
Well, there is something. Though, those Mormons, they keep on electing that idiot every 6 years. They're the United States Senate, and he never has any competition whatsoever.
Okay, but let's not make it a religious slime. I don't think that's appropriate, and I just don't approve of that. Michael in Antioch, California, you're next. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter.
Hi, Peter. I have a suggestion as to what we progressives can do with these red herrings that the Republicans are throwing up in front of us. And that suggestion is just don't address them. We should just bypass them. Let them talk about it. As a matter of fact, this is radical, I realize, but with flag burning, let them pass the bill. I mean, and let them amend the Constitution. They tried amending the Constitution before to take a right away from Americans with prohibition, and it was overturned. So can this be overturned? We should just stick to the issues that need to be spoken to. And I don't mean to marginalize gay marriage either. I know that's very important. But you know that they're throwing these things up to take our minds off of the important issues. And it would be so neat if we had a loyal opposition that wouldn't even debate it. Let them pass it. Just let them pass it.
Well, Michael, I understand your point, and there is a part of me that thought of that, okay, that said, you know, talking about this simply encourages them. But I think it's important to note that Democrats are supporting this effort, and that as a progressive who aligns often with the Democratic Party, I have to say, not in my name. And my Senator Dianne Feinstein is co-sponsor of this misguided measure. And I've got a statement from her office that just came in over email. Let's see. In a sense, I think our flag is the physical fabric of our society, knitting together disparate peoples from distant lands, uniting us in a common bond, not just of individual liberty, but also of responsibility to one another. Well, Senator Feinstein, you are off base. You are pandering to the least informed elements in our society and to those who vote mostly with the Republicans. And this isn't where it stops, Michael. We've got a Freedom to Display the Flag Act, which is under consideration in the House right now, and that would force condominiums to end any restrictions on the size of a flag that a resident could place there. They're also trying to pass the Pledge Protection Act to keep under God in the Pledge of Allegiance, and in an end run, block federal courts from hearing constitutional challenges to the pledge. We've got to say no, and we've got to say it loudly, and we've got to make sure Democrats hear it. I'm Peter B. Collins on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I get up each morning and dust off my wits, open the paper and read the obits. If I'm not in there, I know I'm not dead, so I eat a good breakfast and go back to bed. And how do I know my youth is all spent?
I know a lot of tunes, I can't identify that one. I like it. It's Pete Seeger from the Tom Hartman iPod Collection. It is the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins, your humble substitute host, sitting in for Tom today. We're taking your calls at 866-440-TOM, 866-440-8466. You can email me, peter@peterbcollins.com, and I'll be delighted to hear from you wherever you happen to be listening. And just a further quote from Senator Feinstein of California regarding this misguided debate that's in the Senate and taking up valuable time and energy over protecting the American flag. She wrote, the Flag Protection Amendment would not prohibit flag burning. Rather, the amendment would simply return to Congress the ability to protect the flag as it has been protected throughout most of the nation's history. Some opponents of the Flag Protection Amendment argue that we must choose between trampling on the flag and trampling on the First Amendment. I strongly disagree, she said. Well, Senator Feinstein, I'm sorry. This is just a Republican base-oriented issue. And in my view, Democrats have no business supporting this, and it is a waste of time. And down the line, I think it'll be very hard for states to ratify this amendment if it does get out of Washington. But I don't even want to go that route. I don't want to see it take up the time and effort of state legislatures down the road. What do you think? I'd like to hear from you. 866-440-8466. Let's see who's next. Rebecca in Langley, Washington, listening on KPTK. Welcome.
Oh, hi. I had a couple of comments. The first one, I haven't been able to listen constantly, but I heard Brad earlier. And there seems to be this sort of strain among progressives, of whom I count myself, but a progressive Democrat, but I keep seeing division, you know, between the progressive wing and the what's perceived, I guess, is the mainstream wing, and the idea that we shouldn't support people who are part of the mainstream, you know, boycott DSCC or DCCC or whatever. And I just see a replay, you know, of what seems to have happened in 2000. I know people have other explanations, but I think the Nader vote was definitely a factor in Gore's situation. And if only Ralph Nader had stopped saying, oh, there's no difference. At the last minute, he was saying there was no difference between Bush and Gore, and it just was not true. It's made a huge difference.
Well, I agree that Nader had an impact in Florida, but it was not great enough. If I recall, he only got about 100,000 votes. And there were over 180,000 ballots that were cast that included no vote. They were undervotes for the presidential race.
Yeah, no, I know. There are all those others,
and,
too. But,
and so, yeah. Rebecca, I think the bottom line is that, yes, Nader was a distraction, and had he not been there, Gore might have been able to overcome the margin of graft in Florida. But that said, to your central point, I think that everybody needs to fight for honest elections in this country. And what Friedman said was that he's counseling Democrats not to send money to the DCCC until they acknowledge that this is a significant issue. Now, there is a step forward on that. As I mentioned, Jan Schakowsky, the congresswoman from Chicago, has buttonholed Rahm Emanuel, who is the chair of the DCCC this year. And she told me last week that she thinks the DCCC is going to issue a statement to Democrats encouraging people to be vigilant and even setting up some volunteer poll-watching operations for the November elections. I think that's a positive step. I don't think that divides the party.
Yeah. Well, I think there are also people who didn't vote. Just briefly on 2000, if Nader had stood up there and said, please go vote for Gore, people who also were standing out who had this philosophy of let's let things get worse, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that would have made more of a difference, not only the votes, people who actually cast their ballots for him.
Yeah.
And then I just want us to all find ways to support each other and not cut off, you know, one Democratic foot from another arm or something. I think it just plays, you know, into the...
I understand your point, but it's also important not to be taken for granted. And I believe that the Democratic Party takes large portions of its membership for granted, and just assumes that they will always vote Democratic and that they will actually show up on Election Day. And those are phony assumptions.
Yeah, but it's not going to work either if the progressives go out in left field too far and don't see where their common ground is.
With, I understand.
You know,
I appreciate the call.
Mainstream. I think sometimes we have to go mainstream, too.
Thank you, Rebecca. Now to Jana in Olympia, Washington. Hello, Jana. You're on the Tom Hartman program with Peter B.
Hi, Peter. I'd like to pick up on a comment made by a previous caller about moves being made or possibly being made to change the Constitution to allow Arnold Schwarzenegger to run.
Mm-hmm.
If that's true, that's far more serious than the flag-burning smokescreen. I, in fact, have a bet riding on this that I placed with a friend that dates back to the recall election that in California that got Arnold in. Mm-hmm. And I said to my friend, this is simply to establish a track record for him. They need a new puppet. They're out of puppets. There's some reason they can't run Jeb, something in his closet. Bush is a puppet, and Reagan was a puppet, and they need a new actor, and that's all they've got. So this is something we really need to be alert to.
Well, you're correct, and here in California, you know, we are held hostage by an Austrian-born action movie star who's playing our governor.
Who can take California? Set it on its ear. Stop it in its tracks and take it out of gear. The girly man.
The girly man.
The girly man can.
Sorry, Jonna, I just couldn't resist.
That's okay. If this wasn't so scary, it really would be funny.
Well, I can tell you at this point that there has been no progress in the Orrin Hatch proposal to change the Constitution to allow a foreign-born person to run for president if he or she has lived in the country for 20 years or more. That was the proposal. I don't believe it's even had hearings before a Senate committee.
Well, I'm reassured to hear this. This is a bet I hope to lose.
Okay, good. Thank you, Jonna.
Thank you.
Joe in Pittsburgh, you're next here on the Tom Hartman Program, listening on WPTT.
Good afternoon, Peter. Thanks for taking the call. I want to make a comment about the recent conservative push to have the New York Times tried and arrested for treason.
Right. You know, I heard one very shrill right-wing radio talk show host from San Francisco, and I apologize. She was on Hardball last night. Opposite Al Sharpton, a very interesting pairing, and she just kept screaming that, you know, this is treason and we've got to try them and lock them up. it's just ridiculous.
I saw the same thing, and she's a Coulter wannabe, but I have a feeling they're going to rein her in for this reason. If you remember the four-part series, 9/11 Israeli Connection, which Fox News did back in December of 2001, all through the program, they talk about how America is wiretapping all the phones so that we can keep track of the terrorists. And they also mention that we're using the banking circles to keep an eye on accounts because of all the funding that's going to the terrorists.
Well, now, you know, one of my suspicions here, Joe, is that since the banking community knew that their records were being examined, since Al-Qaeda clearly knows that their transfer of funds has been under scrutiny, going back to the money that went through Dubai to Mohammed Atta from the Pakistani intelligence division just before 9/11. It appears to me that the only person who was surprised by the New York Times disclosure is a guy named George W. Bush.
Yeah, or President Cheney. But one of, you know, when they talk about all this secrecy, a couple of weeks ago when we killed Zakharwi, right away they showed us the bomb and how it exploded. And the question was, geez, we found them. Military intelligence did a good job. And then they couldn't wait to get out and tell us that, hey, we followed his spiritual leader back to his hideout. I think they told the bad guys more in that than anything else has been put on any TV or the New York Times.
And I believe that this is just a pushback in the same way that the whole Valerie Plame episode was to send a message to others that this administration will be ruthless in marginalizing or damaging its enemies. And this is where they've set this up now, that essentially they're tilting at the New York Times. And my belief is that they are trying to intimidate them to prevent them from publishing something else that we haven't seen yet. Because, Joe, my sources indicate that there is some sort of a massive spying program bigger than the NSA, bigger than this most recent disclosure about financial investigations. And they're, I think, trying to set the stage to prevent publication of things that would be even more damaging. That's my informed speculation. Thank you, Joe. Now to Dave in New Albany, Indiana. Hi, Dave. You're on the air on the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi, how are you doing?
Pretty good, thanks.
My condolences to the Hartmans first.
Thank you.
What I'm trying to get across or have people understand is that the flag code, there is a flag code, a recommended procedure for the proper presentation of the flag.
Mm-hmm.
burning a flag is not the only desecration. There are items in the code that restrict the flag from being used as a wearing apparel,
mm-hmm.
the correct display of a flag on a car.
Right.
And there was a time. I'm 72 years old, so I'm this argument has been going on for years and years and years.
Right.
But there was a time when just the massing of American flags was considered desecration. For instance, the reason, or one explanation for that is, under Hitler, when, you know,
Dave, I can tell you have more to say, so hold on through the break. We'll bring you right back and let you finish your point, because I like to let people do that. We'll continue in a moment on the Tom Hartmann Program. I'm Peter B. Collins.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Andy Collins in for Tom, and it's time for the fictional portion of our broadcast day. Are you ready?
Don't believe me about trouble. Not a word.
Yes, this is a dispatch from Andy Borowitz. You can read it for yourself at borowitzreport.com. It comes in my email every day. The headline reads, Cheney stars in pro-global warming film, A Really Convenient Truth, set for nationwide release. In an attempt to counteract the impact of former Vice President Al Gore's cautionary film about global warming, An Inconvenient Truth, Vice President Dick Cheney is starring in a new film advocating global warming, Mr. Cheney confirmed today. His film, entitled A Really Convenient Truth, will open in theaters nationwide in time for the fall 2006 midterm elections. I saw the Al Gore movie, and quite frankly, the whole thing was a downer from the word go, Cheney said at a White House briefing. I thought it was time to tell the American people the good news about global warming. The truth is, as the entire world turns into a red-hot tropical zone, it'll be possible to go on vacation wherever you are, Mr. Cheney added. When was the last time you wanted to take a vacation on a glacier anyway? The vice president added that soon it'll be so hot everywhere in the country that it'll no longer be necessary to go to Florida for vacation, adding, which is a good thing, because no one can afford to drive to Florida anymore. Mr. Cheney said he'd show his film to the U.S. Supreme Court and let the justices decide whose film is better, his or Gore's. And at the Supreme Court today, the justices found in favor of Cheney by a 5-4 vote. Elsewhere, after a new study showed that boys with older brothers are more likely to be gay, President Bush proposed a constitutional amendment banning older brothers. Thank you to Andy Borowitz. Dave in New Albany, Indiana, you're back on the air, and I wanted to give you a chance to complete your point. You were talking about the flag code, and go right ahead.
Well, the point I'm trying to make is that if the law is passed, if a constitutional amendment passes, is it going to mean that every guy that wears a tie with an American flag on it, or as an American flag, or a swimsuit that you see on the beach, are these people going to be arrested? Are they going to be, you know? All I'm saying is that.
Right. Think of the picnic table cloths that are in a flag motif. I mean, it's everywhere. They're bumper stickers. One of my radio stations has bumper stickers with a flag motif.
Well, and the only point I'm trying to make is that with the amount of time that we're wasting with this debate, supposedly, that's going on, we could be educating people on things like this. Instead of debating whether we should pass a law against it, we ought to be discussing what the flag code is. If more people understood what it really is that is, you know, a desecration of the flag, we wouldn't have all these problems, or we wouldn't have this.
And of course, it is an election year, which is why it's on the agenda. It's interesting, you know, the Republicans didn't do anything about gay marriage pretty much since 2004, and all of a sudden that was back in front view, and immigration issues, and now this. It's all pretty calculated. Thank you, Dave. Now to Eleanor in Pittsburgh. Hello, Eleanor. You're on the Tom Hartmann Program.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Good. The gentleman before me really said what I was going to say, in that, you know, a lot of people consider wearing the U.S. flag on apparel, what have you, is a desecration. So millions of people do this, and have yard signs and yard artwork with flags on, and is all of this going to be the desecration of the flag?
Right, and to me, you know, a caller earlier pointed out, an American flag manufactured in China is insulting to me. I don't know that it amounts to desecration, and I don't really want to see a constitutional amendment to prevent American flags from being made in China, but I do think that, you know, it's ironic, if nothing else.
And also, a lot of this, the clothing with American flags on it, whether it be hats or ties or T-shirts or what have you, are made in China also.
Right.
So,
and, you know, the thing I'm waiting to hear in this debate is that the thong that Monica Lewinsky showed Bill Clinton had an American flag on it. You know, it always comes back to Clinton's fault, and that's what I'm waiting to hear in this debate. Thank you, Eleanor. Todd in Marina, listening on KRXA 540. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you for taking my call this morning.
Oh, I hate it when you say that, but I'll take it anyway.
Well, you know, this flag amendment issue, I'm a veteran, and I am so upset because, personally, my patriotism runs much deeper than to any piece of cloth. You know, the Constitution is a great document, but we have so many issues that are really important that the Senate, immigration, you know, that they can't pass. They don't have the time, but Dianne Feinstein's going to waste 2 days.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Well, Todd, as a vet, I really appreciate your comment. And let me ask you this. I made this statement before, that if somebody, you know, is a deep lover of our flag, and they are offended by any kind of expression that people use, up to and including burning it, is that not a self-inflicted injury to that person? Because you can simply rationalize it and say, well, you know, he burned the flag, and I don't approve of that. But to take it so personally and deeply, is that not a self-inflicted condition?
Yes, it is. And it's the Constitution and civil rights are for the minority. It's to protect the individual in our country that has the minority viewpoint. You know, and people don't realize that sometimes, you know, that's the great thing about our country is you can stand up and say, I disagree. And I think it's just a stepping stone, because once you're not able to desecrate or burn the flag, next it will be you're not allowed to say anything bad against the president.
Right. Todd, I'm out of time here, but you put it very well. You get the last word on the issue, and I'm very proud that you called and that you're from the Monterey area. So thanks for joining us today. Well, that does it for this edition of the Tom Hartman Program. You'll hear the best of Tom Hartman tomorrow, and I'll be back with you on Thursday. Same time and same stations. Looking forward to it. In the meantime, drop me a note, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. And thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman Program today.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.